Never, ever, ever follow Mario Drummond. I'm Laura Kevin. I'm going to talk a little bit about some research and training investments that we've been making at the federal level at the Federal Maternal and Child Health Bureau to help support the wonderful work that you're doing around Life Course around the country. I have no relationships to disclose. A little bit, I have the wonderful good fortune of working in an agency that allows me to bring together research investments, training investments to help support what goes on in our policy development and our programs. And I hope that we can build on the promise of Life Course to integrate those three items over time. Oops, excuse me. I'm going to talk a little bit about threads of where we've been with MCH Life Course and then talk about some issues for the future that I hope will open us up for our discussion as a group. As Milt mentioned and as Peter mentioned earlier, this is absolutely consonant with MCH history. We've actually been looking at social determinants of health for far longer than we've been calling it that. Now we're at the point where we're making the case. The science is much stronger than it used to be. We're making some investments in the MCH research program to contribute to that scientific basis as well. We've invested in the wonderful conceptual framework that was developed by Amy Fine and Milt Kotelchuk to help talk about a common language around Life Course so that we're speaking the same language, not only among ourselves but with new partners as we engage around different tables that where we might not have been before. I want to talk also about some research and education needs because that's a common theme that we hear over and over, and we're trying to provide some tools that will be of service to you. So where are we now and what do we need to move forward? You've heard these themes already. Program development, there's a lot of innovation going on in the field within local public health agencies, state public health agencies. The federal, we're a little bit slower to come around to the innovation. We need to share these approaches. We need to analyze these approaches and determine which ones we need to invest more resources in. We need to look at measurement. We need to look at longitudinal data sets. We need to look at linking of data sets. And some of that is being supported by the Life Course Research Network that we're supporting. Partnerships and supporting innovation. So where we've been, we've commissioned the concept paper to try to come up with a common framework around Life Course to inform a strategic plan and then some resources I want to talk about. Milt already talked about the T2E2, common language that we can use to talk about very complex issues around Life Course, but it's not just Life Course, it's Life Course and social determinants of health, and it's not just Life Course and social determinants of health, it's also health equity. We're talking about very broad concepts here. So what have we been doing? We've been conducting listening sessions with many partners to talk about this common need for a common language, gathering program examples, and Mario shared several of them at the local level. Again, been doing innovation for a number of years. We've been examining priority needs that were determined through the Title V needs assessment process and looking at those, and I'll give an example in just a moment and talk about what's going on from an example that I heard on a call very recently from Rhode Island, and then some partnerships. So this was a priority need that was mentioned in the 2011 Rhode Island needs assessment for their Title V block grant. They wanted to build Rhode Island public health infrastructure to reduce health disparities and build health equity by adopting social determinants of health into public health practice. Pretty broad idea to address. This is a tool that they're using to make that happen. They took Dr. Frieden's equity pyramid that he's introduced on several occasions, you probably have seen this, and they're examining their investments within their state health department with this lens to determine their priorities, to determine how they might reallocate resources over time. So moving away from strictly education and counseling interventions that have the lowest impact to moving down this pyramid to social and environmental determinants of health, much broader, many more diverse partners involved in the process, as you heard Mario describe. So what are some of the science and the tools that we've been contributing from the Maternal and Child Health Bureau? I mentioned the concept paper. We also have an online resource guide, and I'll show you several screenshots for that. These are tools you can use today. Instructional resources, if you happen to teach. There are slide sets that you are welcome to use. There are short videos that you are welcome to use. There are curricula that have been developed across the country. We also are supporting an MCH Life Course Research Network, and I'll talk a little about that in much more depth. This is a screenshot of the Life Course resource guide developed by Holly Grayson. Holly, are you here? Holly Grayson, thank you. It has implementation tools, teaching resources, and then a link to the research network. So if you wanted a copy of the concept paper, for example, it's there. Toolboxes developed by other partners. CityMatch, who is also here, has developed a wonderful website, and I have a screenshot of one of their tools also, a Life Course game that is wonderful for engaging community partners. The CDC Health Disparities investments, as well as their community transformation grants, are linked. We have links from our website here. In addition, teaching resources if you're teaching this content. And think about this not only if you're in schools of public health, but I know for us as an agency, when we first started thinking about pursuing a life course perspective, we spent time in staff development efforts, learning from the experts. What is the science that supports this? What is the sort of political will that will need to be in place to support this sort of approach over time? It takes time. This is the example that I gave from CityMatch, and I know there are CityMatch members in the audience. This is a wonderful tool, the CityMatch Life Course game. There are also short clips that integrate from research to policy to practice. This is just one example from the Center on the Developing Child. These are short video vignettes about this is the state of the science around early childhood development. And then one of our investments is the MCH Life Course Research Network. It just started about a year ago. Dr. Neil Halfon is the PI for this grant, and it's at the University of California at Los Angeles. The goals are to advance the research into the developmental origins and impacts of health and maximize the impact of research on MCH practices, programs, and policy, and the elimination of health disparities over the lifespan. And we've given them a multi-million dollars. I'm lying. We haven't given them nearly enough money to do these goals. So updates, where are they now? They're developing a research design plan. They had a meeting in May of this year, May of 2011, and they've done a wonderful webinar series that I hope that many of you are aware of, and if not, I hope that you will look at it now. Looking at interviewing some of the thought leaders around many diverse areas around life course development, and these webinars are now posted and available for you to view, and also there's a social cast, which is a social media, to allow you to interact with other folks around the country who are interested in exploring life course also. So this is an example. This is my lovely purple screen, and you can see me in the left corner up there. So this is the social cast, social media, where you can interact with other folks around the country around areas that you're interested in exploring around life course. So using life course in your work, you've heard many of these examples already from previous presenters. Education, we're providing tools for staff development and framing of priority needs. We've seen how that's unfolding certainly within state Title V agencies over time. If you look at their needs assessment, it's much more heavily emphasizing life course and social determinants now in the language they're using and how they're framing the policies and programs. Research and data, the Life Course Research Network will certainly be supporting this as well. I know at the MCH EPI meeting upcoming in December, there will be several sessions also addressing these issues of linking data sets, what longitudinal data sets exist currently, and what sorts of data sets do we need to link over time to examine many of the issues around life course that we need to be pursuing. But also looking, as Mario mentioned, what's currently in place that already emphasizes social determinants. You might not be calling it that, but what do you already have in place that are addressing many of these issues? And then there are so many natural alliances, not only in this point in time, but there also are some new funding mechanisms around the community transformation grants and others that are natural alliances between maternal, child, and adolescent health and some of these other investments and funding opportunities available. Until we get to a point where we as feds can do a better job of blending funding streams and doing it at that level, we know that that's where we need to move. It's very hard to do that when you have congressional mandates that have a particular area of focus. But we can do a better job of doing that as well. I want to make sure that we have plenty of time for discussion, so I'm going to wrap it up. This is the website for all of the Life Course resources that I mentioned. You're also free to send me an email. I'm happy to respond to any questions. Thank you very much. I lied.
Thank you. They're all pretty great, huh? Thank you. As I said in the beginning, this is a forum, and so we wanted to make sure that we had some time to dialogue and really start thinking about what does this mean for MCH, and knowing that we have a range of people who make up the section, wanted to provide you with some perspective from different sectors, and so hopefully you've gotten a flavor of the overall theory, clinical, federal, community practice. So as you're kind of getting ready with your questions, and I know the first one sometimes is hard to ask, just take a second and think about, you know, what about this excites you for MCH? And what about this actually scares you just a little bit? And we're happy to hear some of your thoughts on that while you're thinking about a question.
It seems to me that one of the limitations right now...
Can you stand up? And I'm not sure if everyone can hear you.
It seems to me that one of the limitations we have right now is that we're still talking to the same audience, the Journal of Child Health. And one of the most important implications of all of this is the implications for chronic disease prevention. Person who's basically related to the National Association of Chronic Disease Epidemiology, who's trying to make a bridge between chronic disease epidemiology and maternal child health around gestational diabetes. That's Joan Ware. Anybody's interested in making a connection with her. But it seems to me that's
right.
Only the tiniest tip of trying to integrate ourselves with a much larger audience who I think we need to figure out how to frame our message. If we simply say, the stuff we're thinking about will affect chronic disease of these people 50 years later, they can say, yes, it's very interventional. And I think we need to figure out ways to partner with them. I sat down with our chronic disease people in Oregon, and we loved the conversation, but it was partly because of the way the funds are siloed, and because of the instructions that they're under from CDC, and partly because of the limitations of our imagination, we intend to continue the discussion, but it'd be really nice to see gestational diabetes and 100 other topics where we're working collaboratively with other areas.
Anyone want to react?
I'll take a quick stab. I think you make a very, very good point. I remember when Dr. Frieden was at our city health department, he made it very, very clear that the MCH division and a chronic disease division had to begin to collaborate. Inside my own organization, in terms of some of the clinicians, we've become chronic disease experts. Because when you look at the data in New York City, the gestational diabetes rate has increased by almost 40% in New York City. We see clear channels of interaction between the science and methodologies of chronic disease in the area of high blood pressure, in the area of gestational diabetes, in the area of asthma management, and more importantly, in the area of maternal mental health, is tied to our core work in MCH in and of itself. And so we learn from our chronic disease scientists at the health department as well as throughout the New York City area, and then we have a lot to share with them on the MCH side. And my final comment on this subject matter is that the Community Transformation Grant, for the first time, provides an opportunity for these two sectors that have been in silos to begin to work together. There were a number of MCH chronic disease applications that were submitted to CDC. I don't think a lot of them were funded, but I think that CDC has to change now a little bit. I'm not going to say that look at this thing through rose-colored glasses. We still have silos throughout the industry. But the more that CDG opens up the possibility for MCH and chronic disease to work together even more.
Over there. And please stand up and project. I think it's hard to hear in here. Question's fine.
Center counseling and so forth. But since life, of course, perspective, two things. First, the public health nutritionists have been meeting and have a series of papers coming forth on how to use the life course in nutrition. So if you talk to your colleagues at UCLA, they're leading this whole effort that I know you're appropriate, but funded by the Bureau, the nutrition folks have been meeting actively. This kind of conversation is taking place in every one of the training of your training programs. Several of us speak at several of them, so there's an effort. I just want to say one other thing. I love you mentioned nutrition, because nutrition is a perfect example of where we have kind of longitudinal disconnects. I go to WIC meetings nationally. They hate me. Because I always say, why do we kick the women off of WIC at the end of either 6 weeks or, you know, after they stop breastfeeding? You know, this new period suggests the issues around obesity, weight, that maybe the W in WIC should be extended. That's an issue. The second thing is, at 5 years of age, we kick the kids off or the mothers off. Think about longitudinal disconnects. You know, yes, this was special nutrition needs during periods of growth. But it turns out there's always special periods of needs and growth. And so there's a good program. It's a wonderful program. I'm a big advocate of WIC, but it stops. It's not well integrated, and it's not always that well integrated with the MCH programs. It's, you know, it's a very, you're in the agriculture department, it's pretty top down. Some places it's great integration, but some places it isn't. So is there opportunity? I'm glad you're a student. That's why you're here, you know, gaining these skills. So thank you.
Just to build on what Milt said, so we support, that was not part of my presentation, but we support about 140 training programs across the country, all maternal and child health focused. We support about 140 training programs across the country, all maternal and child health focused, and all of them we're now, it's in their guidances to talk about life course. So it will become, I mean, in schools of public health, it's been there forever. Developmental behavioral PEDS, actually in many of the nutrition programs too, it's been there for a long time. I think that there are many partners within the universities who absolutely have a shared perspective in sociology and human development and other programs that will resonate with the messages as well. We are trying to get it integrated into curricula across the country. If you send me an email, I will connect you to the nutrition programs that are looking at life course in particular, because that's a group you need to with which you need to affiliate. And we'll make sure you make that connection.
And getting back to your question on research, I think that there's lots of areas of research in life course that we need to be thinking about. But I think one big one is still what are the upstream determinants that we need to be, what are the upstream determinants that kind of link early determinants and early antecedents of health to chronic disease later on, kind of linking to the previous question, because I think that there's still a lot we need to learn in that area. But I think, you know, getting to the previous question again, I think there's a lot of advocacy we need to do around the whole life course theory, not to the choir, but to the adult colleagues as well, about why we need to be investing early. And that can sometimes be a political issue. But for instance, at NIH, they fund a lot of research on obesity. A lot of it's in adults, a lot of it's bariatric surgery, which is very important. But, you know, I think we equally need to invest much younger than adults.
Margie, I saw your hand first.
Well, I'm kind of a hybrid public health and social work, and I want to, I just came from the Council on Social Work Education meeting in Atlanta, and we were talking about life course perspective there, so I want you to include social work as a very willing and cooperative partner when you think about this. We were talking about, with the Affordable Care Act, making sure that social work is present in primary care.
Had an eager hand over here. Mario, you want to take that?
I'll take a quick stab, and then maybe Milt can chip in also.
Got us on. Colleagues, I think it's an important question, and I'm a man heading up a maternal and child health agency in New York City, so you pose the right question to me. But conceptually, colleagues, where we've placed men in our model is really at the interconceptional care phase, where we are working with men and women together as a family to develop their reproductive life plan and project out when they're going to have their next baby. What does daddy got to do now, you know, to make sure that 18 months from now or 20 months from now, that's when we're going to have that next child? And then what will mommy have to do? Of course, programmatically, we've been taking advantage of funding opportunities locally on a national level where fatherhood is a growing fatherhood movement where there's a financing base behind it. Whether it's Administration for Children and Families, whether it's local or state agencies that are providing dollars for fatherhood case management programs. And so part of the job of anybody that's doing Life Course is that you got to be an opportunist. You have to find the resources that are out there in the external environment and match them to mission. I'm not saying go for all of the dollars that don't fit mission. But if there's something that's out there that fits mission, and mission now is not 9 months. Mission now is from the cradle to the grave.
Since you gave me a lead. So to answer your question, MCH Life Course is for men, period. It's also for women. It's for kids. It's not discriminating against men. The men are on that life curve just as well as women, and really depends on your audience. We chose reproductive outcomes as the topic that was really one of the key issues that got many people here, but child development is not a male-female issue, and nor is reproductive a male-female issue. So men have to be involved. There are papers that have been written. They're harder to get in, but I wrote a paper with some of my colleagues on men and preconception health and the health of men and using pregnancy as a period to address men's health and men's development, which also develops very rapidly during pregnancy. You know, you just have to think a lot about incorporating men in it. Sometimes our field has been, it's often a resource issue. Resources for women have been really difficult to get. So, and men have traditionally had more resources. But men as fathers, men's own development is a really important topic area and equally as important in thinking about life course kind of curves. And we could do a lot with that. And I think we can do more than we have. And I think Mario's correct that there's been more efforts and Healthy Start and other things to incorporate men. And I think I'll end by just noting, it's interesting to me that both the women and the men, that there was a great project in forgetting which county in California, did a men's health initiative. It was fabulous. They just asked, they realized how many men they employed. They started asking men how did they want to be involved. Different places that men touch the healthcare system to really ask. And I think that the issue of both respect for men in this, but also jobs, employment, which were the same issues that the women also raised, I thought was kind of fascinating. Men are very central to the family life, and I think they're equally as important as women for life course models, period.
Jonathan?
I don't think that an elderly person with a disability deserves the same amount of support as a child.
Well, I'm not sure whether I'm disagreeing or agreeing. That's tough. But I would say that, as I said in one of my slides, which is a slight disagreement with you, that you have to value every age equitably. Every person at any moment is alive and well, and you have to think about it in those terms. We may have different judgments as to what the meaning of the word equity, I'll be very academic for a second, whether you mean equity, there's lots of different ways of framing the concept of equity. I myself don't make that argument. I do want more money for young kids and families. I'm an MCH person. I know our larger system spends excessive amounts of money towards the end of life, that we invest incorrectly in health and medical care. I'm sure you and I are going to agree on this, that we should be investing more in our kids and our younger populations where we can make more of a difference. But in the end, I'm trying to be really careful in phrasing in Life Course to not emphasize that one age is more valuable than another. I think we do a disservice to ourselves. I'm not sure you're going to agree or disagree with me on this. I think we do a disservice if we emphasize one age is more important than another, that the child is more important than the parent. That's why in my slide, I like when we talk about MCH or father-child, or parent-child, that we think about generation because we're each important. This is my period of life. I'd like to live a really full life. I know you're not arguing against that. At this point in life, but I also want my grandkids to live a really full life. I think our country spends their money completely it's a nutty spending of money to spend all of our money on health, on medical care, instead of health care. And I think that might be another way of framing that same kind of debate. This is a worthy discussion within our field to how we want to talk about it, because I think we are going to face political issues. I think these discussions about chronic disease, MCH, we want to be at the table, but that means maybe monies have to shift. These have serious political will concerns, but we need to be able to think how to phrase them, talk about them, and present them to people who will give us support at some point. We need to work with all those many partners at different levels and learn a language to speak that speaks so that they will see investing in health rather than medical care as a worthwhile
thing. And I think we need the research to back it up.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And the research to back up, and the return on investment argument as well. I mean, I think a lot of the reason why we don't invest in prevention is because the return on investment is so far out. And for children, the return on investment is in adulthood. And if I got to get elected next year, you know, that's not going to help me. So, I mean, I think also getting the data on what the return investment is and trying to use that as part of the argument. But it's a tough research to do.
Neil Halfin has a very nice analogy about mortgages. And we should think about mortgages on our kids, sort of really investing in long term for our kids. It's a nice way of thinking about it, to get away from, you know, do we save money if we invest $5 today, we're going to get $10 back tomorrow. That's too narrow a view.
Yeah, hi. My name is Elise Zimmerman, and I think this is a fabulous session. I'm so glad that I chose this. And I have to say, I feel much better from the comments that were just made, because I'm actually a New Yorker living in New Jersey, and I've been accused of being too opportunistic and too confrontational. So now maternal child 9-month commitment.
Very, very good question. I'll just talk about what happened with my board. My board had the same concerns in terms of our agency moving into businesses. I talked about that earlier in my presentation, that didn't fit the historical mission of the agency. And basically the work that I did with my board was to bring people from CDC and also show them the data that the maternal and child health industry is going under transformation, and that historical missions have to be changed and tweaked a little bit to actually meet new needs of women of childbearing age, and now fathers. And so through constant moral suasion, constant presenting data, constantly bringing in consultants, right? Not just me talking this, right? Let's bring in an expert consultant to talk with my board members. We've been able to move into other businesses that historically they would have never imagined us being in. And I've been trying to educate them in a very direct way about what LifeCourse means to our organization, and that we can't stay in one historical business forever, and that we need to be in a variety of new businesses across the LifeCourse, and more importantly, we need to connect those businesses in some form or fashion. So that's what we did. We brought in a consultant, but more importantly, myself as a CEO, I'm really the leader of the organization. I have to make the case, and I would deploy to you that I know you can make that case.
I guess I would just add to that stories, too. I find that stories really do help, and really, you know, telling the story of, you know, I can't help this child whose mother is really depressed. And I'm told all the time, well, that's not pediatric practice. You can't take care of that depressed mother. That's not your job. But telling the story of how it affects the kid, and if you don't take care of that mother, then, you know, this is what the result will be. So not only the research, but the stories.
Right, stories.
We have reached the end of our time, and clearly we could spend a lot more time in discussion, and I think we hope to really get more to that discussion innovation, so we could take that back to the section and maybe have a forum part 2 next year. But please join me in thanking our panelists, who are excellent.